everybody, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show number 40, recorded at the Little Ranch House right here on Southwest Drive in good old Lufkin, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman, Don Patterson and Don Shaw.
Hey there, Thomas.
Hi, guys. How's it going? Good to have you with us today. My name, by the way, is Tom Houston, but the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman, ladies and gentlemen, is Phil Parr.
Well, you kind of introduce them at the same time so that one won't... Because Patterson had mentioned
it. Well, I always complain.
So I introduced Shaw first.
I
don't know if that's good. I think you ought to take turns, like gentlemen.
I think so, too.
I think I should be first for the next 39 times and get caught up, and then...
All these shows.
Well, there's that thought, too. And it's really funny. Don, of course, has just gotten married, as all of you know. Don has just married the lovely and talented Emily Wilson. His name is Emily Wilson Patterson. She's a school teacher, has been for many years, well-respected teacher of blind children and also handicapped children of all kinds. She's has a degree in mobility, I think, teaching blind people that. But she doesn't know diddly about air conditioners, does she?
I think she's a... She is a kind of a frequent listener to the program. So
she never hears the program, and you know it.
Well, she asked me the other day. She said, how can I start listening to the blind name? And I said I would look into it. I wouldn't say
anything. Anyway, he said he had the air conditioners adjusted perfectly, and she came along and moved them. And that's, you married men know your wife is not going to let you put the air conditioner. It's hot, baby. In the next 15 minutes, it's cold, They can't, I don't know, something happens when they pass 50 or 40. They have those little problems, and they just can't get, they don't know whether they're hot or cold. You know, I can't stir up any controversy. Last week, I slam dunked the people who want to blindfold people to teach blind kids, and we got nothing, Today I'm on women, menopausal women. That's what I love to be around. And not a damn lot of letter. I cannot start any controversy.
And did the spill on the library, the digital talking books.
And get nothing. You people have no fire in your belly? Are you all Republicans? What's the deal?
Zilch, zero, nothing.
I'm Garrison Keillor. Garrison Keillor singing, "We're all Republicans now." And of course, Garrison's a Democrat. What do you say? If you want a library with books on the shelf, find the money and buy it yourself. And he said those lovely little kids in orphanages all around the world are going, "God, please don't tax my stock dividends." So, you can't get any controversy. We have a great show for you today. Then we have a fellow that we have, if you're on the list, and if you're not, you should be. We even have Patterson's on the list. You still on the list, huh?
Absolutely, because I don't know how to unsubscribe.
Well, we can block you.
We could.
We have the guys here could block you from the list. Anyway, if you're on the list, you've read the postings and writings and ramblings of Dale Levins. Now, as opposed to Dale Evans, who was married to Roy Rogers, this guy's name starts with an L, Dale Levins. And he's quite a fellow. He is going to be our guest for the next two consecutive weeks. We have him on.
Right.
We recorded an interview with him, and he's an interesting fellow. I think those of you who are handyman people will appreciate his skills, because he's quite a handy fellow. We'll have him on the second half of our show. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the man with the email. By the way, we didn't get any email this week.
Thank you very much.
The group headings there
to read. We did not get
it. So we got some stuff from the list. We don't care. We don't give a damn if you email us or not. We don't want you to email us. BlindHandyman@hotmail.com. Email us. We're sick of this. So we get stuff off the list and good things. That's a great thing about the list. There's always something.
Well, that's what I did this week. I went up to the group page, and I got a couple of questions off the group page along with a couple of responses.
Very good.
And here's a guy named Andrew LaPointe, I hope. Uh-huh. And he says, "Hi, I have a clogged drain in the kitchen. What's the best tool to use for this? I know of a closet auger, I believe that's what it is, for the toilet, a snake, but most tools won't go down the drain. Also, what would someone recommend to use for maintenance? Would pool chlorine full strength be wise?"
Work as well as anything.
Okay.
But my suggestion would be take the trap off first. See if the drain's really clogged. See if the clog's
in the
P-trap
below. Very well could be.
And most times they are in that trap, and that trap comes off easily. You don't have to turn anything off. I'd turn the water off anyway. But just, you know, put a bucket under there, take that trap off, make sure that it's clear and clean. If it isn't, if it is, then you got a problem on further down the line. I would recommend, what would you think, one of those?
Well, I have used, with some success, liquid plumber or Drano either. Yeah. Now, you know, it's hard on your pipes, especially if you have the metal. If you have plastic, it's not quite so bad. And actually, their recommended way to use it is to use it and unclog your thing and then flush it out real good.
Sure.
Flush the line. But if you, it's odd, I have a clogged sink at this moment over at Emily's, the warden's house. And I have tried liquid plumber all last night and all today, and it's kind of coming undone, but then when I think it's done, it's not. So I have another resort, the P-trap. I'm pretty sure that's not where mine is because too much water goes down before it starts backing up.
Yeah.
But right outside, I have a grease trap fitting that I'm fixing to tie into, but it may be plumber time. She said she would put up with it till in the morning, and then she's calling the plumber handyman or not.
See, that's what Luann does, you know. If you're such a handyman, how come this does? You know, that's what they do to you. Once you volunteer to start fixing stuff around the house, women just think, you know, you're responsible for everything. So the grease trap is probably your problem.
Well, my comeback to her was, I said I was a handyman, but I never said I was the fastest handyman in the world.
Yeah, these things all take time.
But
you
then
have to.
There's the water hose gives me a hook up to the hose.
That was going to be my next
thing.
Right.
Thing that's
right. Y'all might describe that, too.
That I would do. It's a thing that screws, and there are three different sizes of these, depending on how big you think your drain is. And your drain is probably a 2-inch line, when it's 1.5 to 2-inch. So that's the size you need, one that gets up to, you know, say there'll be one that'll do 1.5 to 2 inches, 2.5 inches. That's the one you need. And what these things do, you screw them on the end of a water hose, and then when you turn the water on, they blow up like a balloon, and they fill up the drain so the water can't come back toward you.
It can't come back
And
up.
So the water pressure will blow the drain out, usually. Now, the only problem with this is if you get before the vent... we've talked about this before. If you get before the vent, because there's always a vent on that drain that goes
an air vent.
Because when you pour water in the drain, the air that's in the drain's got to go somewhere, and it puffs out the vent on the top of the house. So there's always a vent there. And if you get before the vent, you're liable to shoot water up the vent, and it'll come down on your head. I've done that, too. But if you take the trap off and look at that and see what the deal is, if it's past that trap, you might try some liquid plumber. I think they say every couple months to go ahead and put liquid plumber down your drain as a maintenance.
I think so.
Preventive
just
sort of thing.
General maintenance.
But go to the hardware store and buy. These hoses will be $3.95 for the thing that goes on the end of your hose. Try that. If that doesn't work, call somebody.
That's well, and Robert Stauffer says if it's a hair clog, just bend the wire cloth hanger and pull the hair plug up.
Yeah,
That can be done. Taking the trap off just as easy, though.
Really? Yeah, I agree there.
All right.
And then Chili Blind Man says, take two adjustable pliers and open the trap, catch water in trap, get the water in the trap into a bucket.
Yep.
Most kitchen clogs are in the traps. If not there, put snake in the pipe as far as you need to until you feel some resistance that you know is not a bend in the pipe.
Yeah.
And then he mentioned what Phil just mentioned, the water balloons for drains.
Yeah.
They work good.
They do.
So that was from Chili Blind Man.
I never saw any of these on my. Did I have these on mine?
You should have.
Did I get everything? How long ago was this?
This is like the 28th, 27th.
Okay. Well, I haven't checked it in a few days. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I've never tried hanging pictures along. How do you be sure you hung a picture straight? I like raised plaques rather than pictures because I enjoy feeling them. I'm totally blind, and pictures just don't do anything for me. I have many animal plaques around my place, but Dad put those up. Any response to that?
A level.
A level.
Would, you know, you could level it vertically or horizontally, either
measuring.
Or preferably both. And, you know, when you hang that plaque, you want to have that hook, that your hanger part, whatever you're hanging on, like a string or whatever, try to get in the center of that. That string.
Yeah, if it's a single deal, if it's a hook on each end, though, you got a little different.
Yeah.
Different kind of a problem.
But primarily a level if you can't.
If you're hanging a rectangle picture rather than a plaque, you could measure either from the baseboard up or the ceiling down and lock your ruler, measure on both sides of the picture to keep it straight.
And lock your ruler. Or if you don't have a ruler, a plain old piece of wire will do. cut you a length of wire that's the, you know, we'd put up a hook. So you got something 3 feet long that you want to hang. It has hooks on each end, okay?
Yeah.
Put up one hook in the place you want, say, on the left. Measure from it to the baseboard, and then cut the wire off. Wire's cheap.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you need a roll of wire, telephone wire, some kind of wire around the house. Thin, yeah. Wire. You can straighten out and it'll stay straight. Measure it with a piece of wire. Take the same piece of wire, move it over where you think the other hook goes, and put the other hook up.
Bingo.
So you don't have to buy a tape. You don't have to have a level. You don't have to buy anything. You can use. I used wire to measure everything for years before I ever bought any type of.
If you don't have many tools, man, that would be a good way to go.
If you don't want to buy any tools and all you want to do is hang pictures, but. That would be the easy, but with the string kind, they're easy. You just kind of try to get in the middle of the string and hang them up.
Okay.
For the best.
Here's another response from Gabe Griffith. He says, "Hi, Liz. I'm new to the list and have spent the last few weeks just watching the conversation, but here's a topic I've actually experienced. Something I used to try and make sure the picture is hung straight is to lock a tape measure in place at whatever length I want the picture, either from the ceiling or the sidewall or door frame or such.
Yep.
And by locking the tape measure in place, I'm able to make sure that both sides of the top part of the frame or top and bottom of one side are equal distances from whatever I'm measuring it against. It's amazed some of my sighted friends who complain that I get my pictures straighter than they do."
Well, you know, that's a thought. Yeah. You could do it from a door frame. Like if you were hanging it to the right of a door frame, you could measure from the top of the picture. And put it up there, then measure, you know, the bottom of the frame the same distance from the door, and you're going to get it.
Door frame,
you're going to get it just about right.
As long as the door frame is straight.
That the door frame.
You would think
that's pretty good, though, dude. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Some other ways, Dave and Patricia Farron write, there are three ways to make sure pictures are straight. Since they normally hang by one nail, the only thing to do is balance the picture itself. I do that by putting my hands on the bottom corners and using my own judgment and motor memory and my arms to decide if the thing is straight or not. In other words, push up or down until it feels as straight as possible. Another way is to ask somebody else if the thing is straight or not.
That's true. That
makes sense to me.
And trust me, they'll be happy to help with little task.
They will.
You can even use a straight edge like a yardstick to balance the bottom of a picture that is hanging by a single nail. Secondly, if it's big enough to require two nails, then you need to use a straight edge to put them in evenly. The best way is to put the yardstick up against something you believe to be straight, like a door frame. If your straight edge is flush against a door frame or a wall, for example, then it is sticking straight out across the area where you want to hang your picture.
In other words, if the end was against the door frame and it was straight, then it would be pretty straight going across to put those nails.
Yeah.
That makes good sense.
Yeah, it does.
So I hope we answered Leslie Miller's question.
There are good responses there.
There are two or three good ways to hang a picture.
Yeah.
New people on the list. I never heard of any of these people.
You haven't?
No.
I hadn't either.
I haven't checked the list anyway.
Lots of new members here lately.
There are. We're up to 150 now? Up to 150?
Yeah, 130.
130 people on the list. And tell your friends about the list, and it's
Blind Handyman
subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Blind Handyman
subscribe at yahoogroups.com.
Blind Handyman subscribe at yahoogroups.com. There's Frankie Brown.
You will be on the list.
Tuning up.
Frankie manages somehow to get on every show.
He does, one way or the other.
If our committee approves you, you could be on the list.
I think maybe that was my problem. I had a problem with the committee.
You could have. You better get that drain fixed, or we're calling Loggins in the morning, big boy.
I think so. Whether I like it or not, there's also the little tag on it.
Did she say whether you like it or not?
Well, not exactly, but the way she slammed the car door.
Yeah.
Pretty well, too.
It's kind of red between
them. I'll tell you what. This is show 40. I think I'm going to have a drink just to celebrate show 40.
Yeah, right? I think I have one, too.
A little whiskey and water.
That's a great idea.
We'll be back in a minute with Dale Levins as our guest. Hang on. More with Ryan Handyman coming up.
They're not broadcasting.
This is Steve Mazura.
It's Robin from the Aussie Kaleidoscope.
Living on the edge.
I'm Roger Cool.
The KJS Show.
Hi, this is Patrick Perdue from the
ACBRI DJs are hard at work creating personal web pages about their shows, the music they play, and even a bit about themselves.
Now we're accumulating these web pages into the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring, where you can learn more about the personalities behind the microphone. Go to www.acbradio.org, then choose the interactive link. From there, you can choose the link that will take you to the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring.
Latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.
ACB Radio Mainstream, now delivered live to your phone in the UK using phoneanything.com. The internet over the phone. www.phoneanything.com.
You are listening to The Blind Handyman on the ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back now to the Blind Handyman Show. I'm Phil Parr, and this is the portion of the show where we always introduce our guest, and we have a guest for you today, a gentleman who has been described by people who know him as basically a legend for the things he builds and the ideas he comes up with and the things he can do. His name is Dale Levins, and hi, Dale. How are you, sir?
I'm just great. I'm very flattered.
Well, you don't need to be. I think everything from what I've seen your postings, everything everybody says about you is pretty much true.
I don't think so. Anyway, very nice.
Anyway, I wanted to find out now, first of all, you are in Canada. What part of Canada?
This is Cochrane, Ontario, northeastern corner of the province. We're very near the border with Quebec, some of you may have heard of. And we're about as far north as the road goes. It turns west here and heads out across towards Thunder Bay and ultimately Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
And the Polar Bear Express, which just my little efforts to help promote our local tourist industry, is a railway train, a tourist train, that terminates here at Cochrane and runs up to the tip of the James Bay coast.
Mm-hmm.
So James Bay being a little piece hanging down from Hudson's Bay, where it's about 185 kilometers, I think, from here to the coast.
185 kilometers to the coast.
Yeah, that would be like about 218, are you telling me? Okay, probably about 130 miles, 140 miles to the James Bay coast.
That person talking in the background is your wife?
Yes.
And she told me yesterday, I called her and asked her if it would be a problem for me to call on Tuesday instead of Monday, and she said, no, that she was your wife, it wouldn't be a problem.
She makes sure things aren't a problem.
Well, let me ask you this. What sort of visual acuity do you have, sir?
I don't have any vision at all.
None.
I did have a little when I was very young, and it sort of disappeared over the teen years.
And do you mind if we ask what age you are?
I'm 53. I'll be 53 next month.
Well, you're up in our range. We're all mid-50s, early 60s type fellas. How did you... Were you born in Canada? Were you born...
I was born about 80 miles south of here, a little town called Kirkland Lake. It was a mining town. At its height, there were five gold mines operating there. And... we moved from there in 1961 when the mine closed to a point about 100 miles south of there called Temagami, another wonderful tourist area, big, beautiful lake. And at that point, I went off. I was about 11. I went off to the School for the Blind here in Ontario. It was then known as the Ontario School for the Blind. And From there, I finished high school there, ended at grade 12. And at that time in our province, we also had a grade 13. So I went and stayed with my sister, who was a teacher in a little town called Blenheim, near Chatham, Ontario. Again, getting pretty close to Windsor now, which is right across from Detroit. And did my grade 13 year there just because it was convenient. And then I went to England and studied physiotherapy there from 69. My first job was there, too, till about 70. I think I came back here in 73. And I married my wife there, and our oldest child was born there.
Did you say physiotherapy?
Yeah, you'd know it as physical therapy in the States.
Is that what you currently do?
Yes. So well, I try not to do very much of it, but they catch me.
So you're basically, we would refer to you as a physical therapist.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, you are the second one I have run across, blind person who is a physical therapist. We'll talk more about that a little later. So you did a blind school, a Canadian blind school, a school for the blind.
Yeah, from the end of grade, well, the beginning of grade 7 through to the end of grade 12.
Now, the first 6 years you went to a public?
Yeah, I did, in Kirkland Lake, and that was pretty interesting. I have an older brother who's also blind, and he went off to the school for the blind a little bit earlier than I did, obviously. He's quite a bit older. And my parents decided that they'd try and keep me as home as long as they could. So I stayed in the sighted school system until we moved. And really, it was because when we moved, it was in Temagami, the school was like a four-room school. I think there were like all eight grades in three or four classrooms. And then for high school, it would have meant traveling by bus for about an hour and a half up to Cobalt each day. And it was felt that with the additional load, you know, that blindness imposes on trying to go to school, that would probably be a little too much.
Now, did you learn Braille at an early age?
I did learn Braille. I started learning Braille and typing when I was probably in about grade 5. But I really never got very good at Braille. I use it all the time. But I'm not like nearly as fast a Braille reader, say, as my wife, who used Braille from the time she went to school.
In other words, you don't do your fun reading in Braille.
No, but I do a lot of research reading or a lot of reference reading, and I do have a Braille embosser, and I transcribe a lot of stuff that I may want to refer to, and I've set up systems for keeping my appointment book current so that I can have a Braille copy of that when I'm running around my department rather than, you know, jumping back and forth to a talking computer or something that's, you know, slapping headphones on and off. It's I find Braille very helpful for that. I use it a lot for note-taking as well.
We had, and I can't remember what show this was on. You may run across this show. I think this fellow Doug Rose has made you a MP3 copy of all the shows, hasn't he?
Yeah, up to show 33, and in fact, I've been listening, I guess, from I've got back as far as about 26, and I keep seeing my name in my email, so I'm getting a little embarrassed. I'm going
We had a lady on, and I can't remember if this was just an email or if I ever actually talked to this lady, who was a physical therapist. She was very interested in how one without sight would get an exact measurement on a leg, for instance.
Ah. Usually I use a fairly low-tech device. They come from Britain, I think, and it's a tape measure, 150 centimeters. I use metric. Well, we tend to use metric in Canada anyway, or at least we're supposed to.
Yeah.
We don't all do it.
So are we, but we don't do it.
Yeah. But I kind of like the metric one for these purposes because centimeter is a little under half an inch, so you get a little bit more accurate measure. This is a flexible tape measure made of some kind of plastic-coated canvas or cotton. And, well, like you could find commercially available, but they punch rivets in it. There's two rivets at every 10 centimeters and a single large rivet at 5 centimeters and then single rivets in between. Now, you have to count.
Sure.
But it's very portable. I can just roll it up and stick it in my lab coat pocket or wherever.
You bought this off the shelf or someone made this for you?
I think the RNIB in Britain produces them.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, this particular one I have now, I worked, I did some locum work in a hospital in Chatham back in middle 80s, I guess. And it was on a rehab unit there, a small rehab unit, and we had a lady in who was very grateful for the services that we were provided, and I don't know how she managed to do it, but over the course, she wasn't in there all that long, and usually it takes time to get things, but anyway, when she finally graduated, after about 6 weeks or something, she presented me with this tape measure, because mine, the one I had, was pretty tatty, and I thought that was very ingenious of her to be able to, first of all, you know, discover that they were available and how she would get one and mm-hmm. so on.
Really?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I've had it for, well, since, I think, 1987. So, you know, they last fairly well.
Well, I think this lady, and I'm going to get her, find out if it, maybe I can get you two together.
Oh, sure.
She had made some sort of a device that had several tape measures on it so that she could measure the
girth.
Yeah, and she seemed to need to measure how much the leg grew when you, I guess as you'd done the physical therapy, how much more muscle there was, or how much, you know, I guess that's something we need to do.
Sometimes,
right?
We do that sort of thing. Yeah. The only other situation that I've run into where I've needed something different, when I don't really need it that much, we use, in this country, they're made by Jobst, but there are other companies that do it too, and they're really a circulation support or a swelling support stocking, and they're woven specifically so that they have graduated pressure from the, well, for example, from the toes on up, and so you have much greater pressure at the foot than you do at the thigh, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they're specifically woven to the shape of that limb. And they're used in other parts of the body as well. We also use them for scar control in burns and that sort of thing. And they come with kits, which are a strip of paper tape, which has a number of pieces coming out at 90 degrees to it every inch. And there are special instructions how to do it. But basically, in the case of the foot, I believe it's five. Now, sighted people have an easy time with this because it's colored,
sure,
color-coded. But I believe it's five straps up. Is the one that has to go around the heel, so you put that one in place first, then you run the ones down around the foot, and then you go on up, and you run this thing around. What I do is I just tape it as I go around. I pull a thing around snug and then tape it to the long vertical piece until the whole thing's done. And then what you do is you read these numbers off and fill them in on a form. So all I do is cut the wrong side of it so I can take it off with a pair of scissors nice and easily, and I flop it on somebody's desk and say, here, fill in the blanks.
Oh, really?
Well, first of all, you know, their clerical people are much more skilled at that than I am anyway.
Oh, sure.
Plus, they can see. Why the hell should I play around?
And that's probably what a sighted therapist would also do, right?
I suspect in most cases they would. I don't know. So. There are some people who insist on doing everything themselves, but I'm not generally among them.
Well, my wife is an attorney, and she occasionally has to type a letter, and she said, I am really an expensive secretary. You know,
exactly.
It costs a lot of money to hire me to type letters. And yeah. I remember at the radio station, they used to occasionally to have me dub the little commercial that came in through the mail. I said, man, Jesus, I'm an expensive dub person.
Yeah.
So I can see that. How did you, well, this is going to run long, and I know it, and I don't even care. How did you get into, what made you decide to become a blind physical therapist?
You want the real answer?
Yeah, I want. Sure,
it's
I want.
Not
the,
very interesting.
This is the truth show, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Here.
When I my parents understood as a minor and so on that there was no way that they could provide for us, you know, for the rest of our lives. And in the late '60s and that time, things like social benefits and so on weren't very good. They're still not particularly good. And so they understood, though, that educated people generally did well in life one way or another. So
yeah.
That's what they understood, that, you know, that was the connection they made.
That you needed an education.
One way or another,
yeah.
When I got to the end of grade 12 at the School for the Blind, there were a couple of options open. We had something that they called a preliminary year in some of the universities that you could go and in order to qualify, you know, for the full program.
Mm-hmm.
However, as I said earlier, I wasn't a very good Braille reader, not a spectacular typist. I love computers, that backspace, delete key, and spell check, and, you know, that's really improved my life a whole big bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those days, and you'll remember this, open reel tape was about the best you could do, and those machines were big and very expensive.
I have several, yes.
Brand new. and there wasn't an install base, and I was never very good at asking people to do stuff for me, particularly, you know, to give them a book to read and then start bugging them every second week, how are you getting on with that, and so on. We had, at that time, very little, really no support to speak of. You know, nowadays they have special education teachers, and universities have whole special needs departments that that transcribe Braille and tape and all sorts of stuff for you. But basically, in those days, we were doing it on our own, and I just knew I didn't have the skills for that. I wasn't sure that I probably could intellectually manage, but you know, those other technical skills I just mm-hmm. didn't have. And so really, I was postponing things. So when I had the opportunity to take grade 13, I thought, oh, good, that's cheap. I can with my sister and just experiment with it a little wee bit. And that was new to all the teachers in that school and so on. But it was fairly, I was successful at it. But I still wasn't happy at committing the kind of cash would be involved. And the school in Britain at the time was a school for the blind and had been operating for a number of years. I knew some people who'd gone, knew of them. And I thought, what the hell, I'll have a go at that. And got scholarships and off I went. But mostly, I was ducking, going to university, spending 3-4 years there, getting a general degree, mm-hmm. and still looking for something to do for a living.
Okay.
You know, I was taking the coward's way out, as it were.
Well, it worked out.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the important thing.
Yeah. Actually, and when I did apply, because of the way our school systems work, I nearly ended up having to sit out a year because the application was accepted, but not until the following year. And I made some calls and got that straightened around. But before that happened, we were looking at what to do. And my father came up with the idea that, you know, in the mining industry, by that time he was managing a small copper mine. And but in the mining industry, 2-3 years is a long time. And he came up with the idea that OMC, Outboard Marine Corporation, I think they're called, they made Peterborough Boats and Johnson and Evinrude, if you're familiar with those companies.
Sure.
At the time, and I think Pioneer Chainsaws. And they had a course, you paid your money, you went. If you succeeded, then you passed their program, and they would give you dibs on a franchise to sell and repair their equipment. And he thought that was a pretty good idea because small motors, outboard motors, snowmobiles, that kind of thing, that's the kind of mechanical traffic that comes to you. And I had demonstrated a little bit of skill, repairing old little outboard motors and stuff around the lake. And so he kind of figured that would be a possibility. And I almost did that, and sometimes I think it might have been okay.
So, but your handy skills had already manifested themselves at that point in time in your life.
Yeah, I've always been pretty good with my hands. Gross things, not good with typing, I'm not a musician. I admire those people who can make all their fingers go in the right places and make beautiful music. Or type accurately. I don't do that. Yeah. I type fast, but I'm not accurate. But when it comes to, things like laying block or banging nails and things like that, I've always been pretty good at it, yeah.
Let me ask one more question about your occupation, then I want to take a break, and we're going to split this into two. We'll have you as a guest 2 weeks in a row, and I want to talk about handyman things.
Sure.
How much resistance, or does someone occasionally come in and go, oh, my God, you're blind. How in the hell could you do anything for me? Does that happen to you?
I can't say that I've ever really experienced it. I experience a lot of interesting responses at times. And people who don't know, and mm-hmm. once I've been around for a while, the people I work with don't really know. They know, but my blindness, well, I'm sure you've experienced
it's not a big deal.
It's almost a part of your character or personality, and they mm-hmm. don't see it anymore. They just know that if there's a door swinging open that you'll hit it, so they push it out of the way, but they're not conscious of you being blind all the time. So I find that often people aren't really prepared because the people around them are so used to the thing, they're not paying any attention, and they just don't quite know how to react initially. But for the most part, if there is, I have a part-time assistant in the department who takes care of all the clerical functions and certain other things, and I occasionally overhear a little bit of whispered conversation between them, and she really doesn't know how to handle it either, but it's not very often. And quite often it'll be around something like I keep a brailler on my desk, so if the phone rings, I can grab a message or bang down a phone number in a hurry or something like this.
Do you think most people who come to you initially already know that you can't
see? They do now in this community, yeah.
I guess they would.
Cochran's about 5,000 people.
Okay. All right.
This is my second stint here. I was here between 73 and 79, and then I came back in 89, so, yeah.
I told a guy the other day, I'll sure be glad when the most important thing about me to you is the fact that I can't see. You know, let's get past that. Quit bringing it up. Well, you're sitting in here without your monitor on. Well, of course I am. What the hell do I need the monitor for? I don't use it.
You know what it is, I found there are a few people out there who never really get over that.
Yeah.
Not many, but a few. I had I have a very wonderful friend. He was an orthopedic surgeon in Dawson Creek when I was out in British Columbia. And I hope he never hears this. I'm sure he won't, because I'm sure he'd be hurt. But wonderful man, and not an intelligent man, obviously. But he never quite got over that. Little situations like, he'd practically knock me down, making sure I didn't trip going down a step.
I got you.
I knew it was there and going to make. You know, he's bigger hazard than being away from him, kind of thing. And there are a few people like that. I find not very many. There are some people who just seem to need to, and I have an idea it has something to do with validating themselves. After all, Phil, if you as a blind person can operate a computer without a monitor and perhaps do things better than he can or as well as he can, then what does that say about him?
That's part of it. I tell you what, let's do, Dale. Let's take a short break, and we're going to have you on in 2 weeks. We'll be back with more of the Blind Handyman Show in just a moment, and I don't know what we're going to talk about, but it'll be interesting. Hang on, all right?
ACB Radio Mainstream,
The Cafe,
ACB Radio Treasure Trove. You can hear
live, unpredictable internet radio
on ACB Radio Interactive.
ACB Radio Interactive,
playing music from
the 1930s and 40s,
the 50s and 60s,
the 1970s,
80s and 90s,
to hits of the new millennium.
ACB Radio Interactive comes to you from at least 6 time zones on 3 continents, bringing you the very best of
country,
top 40,
classic and modern rock,
new age,
folk,
the rare stuff out of the 50s,
jazz,
easy listening, adult contemporary,
and more.
Live, unpredictable internet radio.
ACB Radio Interactive.
Don't risk the disappointment of missing a great ACB radio program. Join our announcements list today. Receive email about upcoming programs on all our channels and new features. To join, send a blank email now to announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
That's announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
Visit our website. Announcements about ACB radio delivered to you direct and free. Just another way to stay in touch with ACB radio. Hang out with other ACB radio listeners. Talk with the hosts. Provide suggestions about the future of ACB radio. It's all possible through the ACB radio friends list.
Thank you for being a friend.
Log on and sign up now. Send a blank message to friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. That's friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. And thank you for being a friend of ACB radio.
Listening to The Blind Handyman on ACB Radio Mainstream. If you have an idea for a topic or project you would like us to discuss, let us know at our address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, back to the show with Don Patterson.
Hey, Don!
Okay, and now we're back. By God.
Live and in person.
Live and in person. No dead air time here.
That's right.
By God, jumped right on it.
Didn't you?
Yeah. and I'm up close to my mic, too.
That's good. We're glad to hear that. And I'm not, but then I'm not the guest. You're the
That's
guy.
Right. Anyway, okay, so springtime, and we know what all that means. It brings chores that you don't
yard
do.
Work.
Yard work. Yard work, that you don't do in the wintertime. And so, especially now that
I do not like yard work either.
Especially now since I've been captured by the warden on a permanent basis. Wound up with 2 yards to kind of not want to do.
Yeah, what a deal.
So what we did after the wedding, we moved over to Emily's house, and we visit mine on a daily basis to see that the
yard work is done.
The yard work
getting
is
done.
It's time to do it. And so anyway, I was gathering up the tools, and I have riding lawnmower, then we have the self-prepared walk-behind lawnmower, and then I have a little bitty push mower, because over on at the Allendale house, is my house, that was the street it was on, has a pretty severe hill, and so I can use the...
To say the least.
That's the understatement of the day.
Okay. And so I can use the rider on part of it, and then you have to use the self-propelled to climb up the hill, and then you use the little bitty lawnmower that just up around the house. And so then you get, gasoline-powered leaf blower and gasoline-powered weed eater.
Yep.
And so now Emily, up until this point, maintains a yard service. And so I haven't had to worry about hers. But I had the equipment, took it over to her house. She wanted to use the weed eater for something. And so I got it out. Well, earlier on, she said, Don, where's your leaf blower? And I said, it's in the garage. I'll get it and crank it up for you. This was over at my house. So I got the leaf blower, pulled it a time or two, and the rope would not recoil.
I've been there.
And I kind of fiddled with it, and it kind of went back, so I tried it one more time. Of course, then the rope just came all the way out. Now the Zippo couldn't. There you are with this rope hanging out. Leaf blower not going. Couldn't dust off the patio, and So anyway, later on, I took it apart. It had little Allen, probably about 5 or 6, maybe about 7 Allen screws. And it's kind of a circuit. Don, are these green machines? You have one just like, or is it Weed Eater?
It's Weed Eater brand.
So little Weed Eater, little bitty runs.
Great.
I mean, just great.
I have
super
the same machine.
Engine. So I took it all apart thinking I could get to the ratcheting mechanism and all that, and I couldn't. I mean, I could roll the rope back up, and when I'd pull it, it would not recoil on its own.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I messed with this thing for a week or so. And then I just threw it all in a bucket, still apart. All the boats said, well, I'll keep it apart, but I'll probably just scrap it. I'll just go buy another one. Even borrowed someone's electric leaf blower. And just one day, by chance, I called Don Shaw, and I was telling him about my plight. And he said, by the way, mine was doing the same thing, and I'll let Don tell you what he did.
Well, it was the same kind of deal. Kind of the rope I noticed just one day was just like it was just really extra hard to pull out.
Yeah.
And same deal. It just would go halfway out and was kind of going back in, but not good. So I don't know. I just said kind of the same thing. What the hell? And just got the old standby, the old WD-40 can, and just sprayed some in there just for the heck of it.
And that fixed it.
Boy, the rope just immediately went right back in.
Yep.
I pulled it 3 or 4 more times, and I said, man, that's a done deal, and sprayed in some more just for good measure.
Yeah.
And it did it.
There are some things that WD-40 is really good for.
Almost kind of like duct tape, 1,001 uses, and I mean, what could you hurt if it's not working anyway? Because I was almost to the throwing stage.
At your
point,
you had nothing to lose.
You had the rope and the handle in your hand, right?
Right. And so I squirted it in there. I swear to goodness, about 2 pulls, it acted like it didn't want to do it. And then all of a sudden, it just went back up in there, and it's working like a champ.
Boy, but you had the rope in your hand.
Huh? No, I didn't have it. Hadn't come loose.
Oh.
But the rope was all the way out. In other words, and it would not recoil. No, it hadn't detached itself.
So WD-40.
Yeah. So that fixed that. And so now, like I say, going on with the yard tool, so then you think, well, what else can happen to you? And so you get the leaf, the weed eater.
The weed eater.
And mine is a Ryobi. There again, Don Shaw has a Ryobi.
Yep.
The same, almost identical models.
It's a fine weed eater, too.
I was trying to get it started, and at the end of last summer, I noticed it was getting a little rough to start. If you've ever messed with a 2-cycle engine, now they will make you cuss sometimes if they just
will.
But this one had always been a good starter, good and would run good, but it was a little raggedy at the end last summer. But so this year I said, well, just get it out early. And so I pulled on it and it started. and it run a little bit, and then it quit. But I noticed that it seemed like I'd felt some gasoline on my hand, you know. So I said, I don't know what that is. I couldn't exactly. Then so I messed with it a little more, and then kind of a piece of plastic or something broke off in my hand.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized it was one of the gas lines, the gas hoses, that was just disintegrating.
Not good.
I had a piece in my hand, and when I touched the piece that was there, it just fell off. It was brittle, and it just began to break. And so I said, you know, I wonder what caused that. And then I touched the other gas line, and same thing.
Yeah.
And so there I was, you know, and I said, well, you know, at 7, you always try to justify everything, too. Especially, I mean, you go buy a new car, you can go, oh, well, you know.
This one's 18 years old.
Yeah, so I was going, well, it's 7 years old anyway, you know, okay, so it runs really good. What the heck, I'll just go buy another weed eater. And so I go to Lowe's, and I'm looking around, and, we're talking a couple of $100. And I said, man, you know, I really don't want to spend it. So I was telling the kid that was showing me, I said, you know, where's the cheap weed eaters? And he's going to, and I said, yeah, I got one, but the gas lines. Oh, the gas lines, well, why don't you fix it yourself? And so he took me to a little bin around the corner, and there I buy a little kit, $5, $4.99, and it's got the little rubber ball, the primer bulb in it.
Yeah.
And it has two pieces of hose cut almost to length. You have one short hose and one long one, and it tells you where to put the short one. And then it what it doesn't tell you is, in my case, there were really 3 lines. There's one inside, and so I had to cut the long hose. But what I did, I looked at the bulb, and, of course, not knowing really what I was doing, not being a small engine repair guy, I said, no, I don't really need this kit. Well, right in the bin next to it was just a 2-foot piece of hose, of the same kind of hose. And I looked on it, specifically said it fit Ryobi.
Yeah.
So I left that first kit, and I bought the hose. Well, that turned out to be a bad decision, because when I got home and I cut it, the instructions say, now, cut this to the original length of your hoses. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
My hoses had disintegrated.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I kind of knew where they went, but I wasn't sure. And so I called Don the phone. Hey, Don, I need to come and look at your weed eater and see how it's. So I did all that. Go back.
Don, I need to come and measure your hose.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. You wouldn't want to. Shut up.
Both of them, Jose and Jose. Right?
You wouldn't want to call a guy and tell him that.
Get out of here.
Anyway, so I get back home, and I cut the hose, and I'm routing them to where they need to go, and I'll get into that in a minute. But as it turns out, this hose was, even though it said it fit my weed eater, was a little big, and it did not want to seem to stay on. They're just pressure fittings, but I mean, there's no clamps to tighten.
Yeah.
The hose just slips over a little nipple-like thing.
So they lied to you, didn't even.
And it was a little large, and so I said, this is just not going to work. And so I went back to Lowe's, bought the original kit with the bulb, which I hadn't meant to replace, and it's turned out that's what you also need
that's
to
the
do.
One you needed anyway.
Because as it turns out, the first time after I had the hose back on, I punched the bulb and it ripped, and so I put the new one in. It's very simple; it snaps in. But anyway, to make a long story short, if you'll put the short hose in this package that you buy, has a definite place to go. And in some of these fittings, you would wonder how they work without leaking, but this one hose is the one that goes from the gas tank into the primer ball, and it literally fits in a hole in the bottom of the gas tank, and there's no clamp that holds it. It just goes into your tank about an inch, and there it stays. It does not leak. I do not know what keeps it from leaking. It just goes in this hose, in this hole. And then you go from the carburetor, from the bottom of the gas tank, the second hose, to the carburetor, to the intake on the carburetor. And then the third hose goes from the primer ball, which hose number one went from the tank to the primer ball. And then the other one goes from the primer ball to an intake in the carburetor. And that's how you prime it when you first want to start to choke it.
And so that one that goes in the bottom of the tank is an air hose.
Right.
Just gives it air.
Well, no, it takes the fuel from the gas tank to the primer ball and holds it there, and then as you mash the ball, it lets it go
into the carburetor.
Yeah, it goes. And so, and what you do, in other words, the short hole has a definite place, and it tells you where. And then the long hose, if you cut it just exact, you can make the two other hoses that you need out of the one. And so that's how I did it. And this seems to be a common problem, especially with 2-cycle engines. I know if I knew then, a long time ago, what I know now, and I was 10 years younger, I would probably go to some kind of engine repair school and learn how to work on jet skis, because this is a common problem in jet skis, and it's quite expensive. They're about $400 or $500 to replace
the
fuel.
So the hoses, sure. I mean, it's something in the gas eats the hoses
up. It's probably the oil-gas mixture, maybe, that makes them brittle. But it also says that these hoses can be used on four-cycle engines. But I've never, man, I've got a lawnmower that's like 10 years old.
Yeah.
You know, never had this problem, but this just became very brittle and just fell apart. So,
is this something you think a total could do, you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because there's places where I was actually inserting these hose.
That you couldn't see.
Couldn't see it anyway, probably. And it was very even difficult to get your hands in there. Like in the one that went into the hole, into the gas tank, I cut it a 45-degree angle. And that way, you know, the hose was almost the same size as the hole, thus the good fit to keep it from leaking. But if you cut the end that you're trying to thread through there at a 45, then I was able to get it up in there. And then the rest is just a matter of forcing a little round hose with a small hole in it over a little fitting on the carburetor, you know, a little extension.
Maybe we'll get somebody who's done this. They can.
A blind man could do it.
No problem. But it's never happened to you, Shaw. You never had this happen.
No, not yet. But my weeder, same brand, of course, but it isn't as old.
Yeah, mine's about seven. So. I bought it a year or so before
I
moved in.
It could be something coming down the line. But I was going to ask you, too, when you got into cutting this hose, was it, like, fairly easy, like to cut?
Yeah, it's very, it's just a small, small diameter you know, if you, it would be something like you might see on a an aquarium pump.
Yeah.
You know, or just little.
So you cut it with your with the pocket knife or scissors?
I cut it with some wire cutters actually. They had a real sharp cut.
Yeah,
you know,
side cutters or wire cutters.
And to make sure kind of that I got it straight.
Yeah.
And
well, you're talking about the gas and oil mixture being tough on these gas hoses. After years go by, I've heard the same thing though, that the gas and oil mixture is just tough on. Just carburetors in general, just the little gaskets and all the little rubber and little needle valves and different things in a carburetor. You know, after a while, it just that either the carburetor problem or the hose problem is what will get you.
These, you know, and you've heard me rave about my moped. Of course, they're not now. This is probably a potential problem, but I mean, the moped is like be 6 years old. And, of course, it's a two-cycle engine.
And it's coming. You'll have the same problem if you keep it long enough.
And if you could replace these. And I know that, like I say, is a big problem. Emily's jet ski happened to be a Sea-Doo, of course, which kind of top of the line. Well, to get a Sea-Doo worked on around here, you have to take it, 50, 60 miles to Livingston? How far is Livingston?
And
put it on a list and wait all summer. In other words, if you're going to get it fixed, you better get it fixed in the wintertime because you won't use it in the summer. But that is a common problem. You know, and then just the general pollution of two-cycle engines. You know, I think Honda now, maybe Kawasaki, several of them are making four-stroke jet ski engines now.
So
there's a lot of... So I don't know if it's just common to the two-cycle engines. I'd never had it happen before.
I've heard some places they're banning two-cycle engines, some communities and things. There's just a lot of pollution.
Well, I tell you what I've done. I've made it very clear early on that I knew nothing. Zilch, Zippo, about lawnmowers, two-cycle engines, weed eaters, leaf blowers. I just, nothing. I mean, I don't know very much about them. But she thinks I know even less. I've never had to work on one. Never.
Great. That's
the deal, man.
I think I'm going to adopt that policy from now on because she's convinced I know nothing about plumbing.
Well, that's the way, you know.
If we do have a good two-cycle or small engine repair person out there somewhere on the list or that's listening to the show, just... send us an email at blindhandyman@hotmail.com and tell us you want to be on the show to tell the world about it, and you'll be an upcoming guest.
That would
guaranteed.
Be something we haven't talked about, and everybody, you know, all blind people that do, that have homes have lawnmowers.
Right.
Yard equipment is some
type.
Unless
they're fortunate enough to, I read in a book yesterday, this was, let's see, where was it? What did I read? Wasn't Dialogue. It was a book I was reading about this guy that had a $700 lawnmower. That he would just sit on. He had the wire around his lot, and he just sat on the porch. It cut his lawn for him. 2,000 square feet an hour.
Yeah. That kind of like we talked about, Don Patterson talked about it.
Yeah,
on
the
show.
IMO. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It's $700.
Yeah. Remember the old two-cycle? I haven't seen one in years, but I back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I've seen two-cycle lawnmowers that had.
I haven't seen one in a while.
Grass with. I hadn't either.
Seemed
hadn't
like
seen
we
one
had one at one time that you mixed oil with.
Yardman. Yeah. I think made one.
Yeah.
I think it was. But yeah, God, that would have been. I loathe two-cycle engines.
Yeah, polluting.
Now, my Thomas moped has spoiled me. 5 years, and I can walk up to it, and it'll crank on the first kick. I mean, it's just an amazing little engine. They should make weed eaters and stuff.
Well, Mama bought it. She bought an electric leaf blower, and it's a Hummer, buddy boy. It'll clean your patio quick.
It's a go, man.
I've never seen anything like it. She said, I want the biggest leaf blower you can buy, and so that's what we've got.
Yeah.
And then John, let me tell you one more thing. John bought a neat deal that you put on the end of a weed eater that'll trim trees. It's about 4 or 5 feet long.
Like a saw blade.
Yeah, it's like a saw blade up there, and he just whacking them limbs off left and right the other day with it.
Well, y'all have, did you find your weed eater with that attachment on it?
No, you'll have to ask them. I don't get into this. I don't do this. That's my brother
and
my wife.
Don't do yards.
No, man, I do. They know it. I don't think
my weed eater's big enough to put that attachment. Some of the larger, you know, more commercial weed eaters.
I go sit on the porch when they start talking about that.
Yeah, yard work.
Show
boy.
Number 40 has come to a close, gentlemen. Right. We've done another one, haven't we? How about that, huh?
Show number
Good guests, good subjects, good topics. Y'all get outside and mow your lawns and do weed eating and stuff.
Not me. Brian. I know like that yard work.
Brian
Harkins, ladies and gentlemen. Guitar player extraordinaire. The next, ladies and gentlemen, the next Randy Prince.
Yeah, Brian guitar Harkins. Playing fool.
He could have played us some live bumper music, couldn't he?
He could have. All right, we're going. We'll see you next week. Don Patterson, Don Shaw, Tom Houston. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Tell you're better paid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. We'll see you next week for show number 41. Phil Parr, I see, said the blind man as you picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced for ACB Radio by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.